Hi, I'm Malcolm Hawker, and this is the CDO Matters podcast, the show where I dig deep into the strategic insights, best practices, and practical recommendations that modern data leaders need to help their organizations become truly data-driven. Tune in for thought-provoking discussions with data, IT, and business leaders to learn about the CDO matters that are top of mind for today's chief data officers. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever time it is, wherever you are. I'm Malcolm Hawker. I'm the host of the CDO Matters podcast. Thank you for joining us today. You are about to hear a conversation related to semantic layers, probably the data fabric. I'm not sure how we'll avoid a conversation around AI because everybody's talking about AI. And that conversation is going to happen with my wonderful friend, Sanjeev Mohan. Hi, Sanjeev.
Hello. Thank you for having me back on your show.
Yeah. Well, the first time it happened very informally, we were at the CDOIQ event at MIT, and you and Mr. Scott Taylor and myself were having some fun and doing some recording. And I think we did like a swag review, or Scott and I, and then we brought you into the conversation. It was a lot of fun, but this is our first formal chat.
Yes, correct.
I recall the first time I ever met you, Sanjeev, and I didn't really actually meet you. I just listened to you. We were both working at Gartner, and you were holding, and I want to say the year was probably 2021, maybe 2020, but probably 2021. And you were holding like a brown bag session, or it was like a lunch and learn type session for a bunch of analysts at Gartner, including myself. And you were basically explaining how AWS works. Do you remember?
I do not.
Okay. That's okay. I barely remember yesterday. But you were explaining kind of the intricacies of provisioning storage and provisioning compute on AWS, because you were an expert in that area. And I remember listening to you thinking, oh man, this guy is smart. This guy is both smart and well-spoken, and I need to follow him, which I ended up doing. And we left Gartner, and we both left around the same time, and now we see each other at events, and I know we support each other's content, but I've been a fan of yours for a number of years now. And I'm just thrilled that you could come back on the podcast.
Thank you so much for saying those kind words. I've cherished our friendship, and I really enjoy every time I get to interact with you. I do have to say one thing, that I'm glad you were impressed with what I was saying. I'm not an expert, and I want people to know this, because we live in a environment where every single day something new happens, and then we are back to the books. So the important thing that I want to bring to the matter here is that I went against the conventional wisdom of a Gartner analyst by getting myself certified as a solution architect on AWS. And you know, that wasn't the done thing. It wasn't a job requirement, but I felt I owed it to my customers. If I knew how to be hands-on and deeply immersed in the technology. And so anybody who's listening, this, my message is that just go out there, do stuff. Like, don't be a passive receiver of information, but actively dive in and, you know, be a participant, be a builder.
I love it. I'm a huge believer in servant leadership, which suggests that as a leader, you need to have at least a baseline understanding of what people are doing day in and day out and how they do it. Now, does that mean that I need to become a data engineer or a data scientist? No, but I need to know how to have a conversation with those people. I need to know how those technologies work. I need to understand the challenges of those technologies. So Couldn't agree more. But before we move deep into our conversation, I do want to just let our listeners know, Sanjeev, you're the founder of Sanjmo Consulting. So you are a consultant in the data and analytics space. So if you're listening and you're a CDO and you want somebody smart to support you in your data and analytics initiatives, Sanjeev's a great guy to do that. Also, you are the host of the It Depends podcast, yeah, which is a very successful, very informative podcast. Another great way to get information from Sanjeev. But just please keep those things in mind. If you are in the market for somebody who is, okay, I still call you an expert, but you're a learner. Clearly you are a learner.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, I mean, okay. People call all kinds of names, influencer, expert, but please go ahead.
Well, so the thing is, and maybe this is why you and I get along so well, is that I don't want to be an influencer.
Yes.
Right? I really don't want to be an influencer. I want to be a helper. Yes. And I want to help people improve how they do data and analytics. I sincerely want CDO tenures to improve. Yeah. I want governance to be viewed as a critical function within businesses. And I know you think the same way about wanting to help and wanting to add value. So yeah, I can go without the influencer title. You and I both.
To me, an influencer is somebody who goes to events, takes selfies, promotes a lot of events, but it's not really creating content. See, you create a lot of content. This is an example of the content you're creating. So I think of myself as somebody who's like I said, a builder who's creating content. I'm not hands-on anymore because of the role I've chosen. So I'm not a developer, I'm not a coder, but I'm trying to connect the dots, come up with, like yesterday on Sunday, I published a podcast on my learnings from Snowflake and Databricks. That was a massive amount of work to compile all the learnings because it was 8 days of learning across the two events. So how do you compile that into 53 minutes is a big task, but I enjoy doing that.
Yeah. Well, and I myself as well, I get a lot of satisfaction sharing what I've learned at conferences because frankly, those conferences are expensive and not everybody gets to go to them. Like Gartner. Right. I mean, you're talking thousands and thousands of dollars to go to a Gartner event. Mm-hmm. And if I can share anything that I've learned and like what you're doing, that's awesome. Yeah. Let's get to the topic. This topic is a result. I chose this one because you and I are actually both going to be at the Enterprise Knowledge Semantic Summit in Munich in Germany in October. Yes. Sanjeev is rightfully the keynote speaker. I'm excited to hear what you have to say. No pressure. but I do. I'm excited about the idea of what I view as a semantic layer. But I'd like to hear what you think about semantic layers. What are they? And where are they going? And what do you think a CDO needs to be thinking about the most?
So we are moving very rapidly. Although this is not a podcast about AI, but because AI is so front and center, so what's happened is that the businesses are in the driving seat. What used to happen was that the IT people would come back after conferences and tell business, you know what, there's this new graph database or there's a new indexing technique and I can improve this query performance and I have a new BI tool with some caching. And the business's eyes would roll because they would be like, okay, so what? You know, am I getting my data, high quality data on time, without breaking the bank is all I care about. So all this mumbo jumbo is not important. But with AI, the businesses now have woken up and realized that there is so much to do with all their data, whether it's structured data in databases, which I think we have a good handle, but even unstructured data, PDF documents. So, maybe I have 20 years of certification documents, and now I want to ask a question in natural language because we don't expect businesses to know even SQL. If they know SQL, great job. But if you don't, we now have the ability to ask questions in natural language. But that question in natural language of your choice, like English or French or whatever it may be, needs to be translated. So we think that LLMs speak English. They don't. LLMs speak mathematics. The probability pieces of code doing probability of what you're understanding, what you're asking, and trying to predict what comes next. So that translation between what the businesses want and where the IT is through that semantic layer. So if I, for example, if I ask a question, hey, ChatGPT, tell me what is going to be the performance of this SKU in Q4 of my fiscal year. What is Q4? What is fiscal year? Which geography? You see, all these things, we expect the semantic layer to grow up to be smart enough to say, your fiscal year started in February 1st of that year. So Q4 will take you to this period. And now I will use all the powers I have to run maybe a SQL query behind the scene or a Python script or whatever it may be. But it's a semantic layer that is the glue between the business and the IT teams.
Man, I love it. There's probably 4 hours of podcast just what you just said. But let's peel the onion a little bit. A few years ago, to me, a semantic layer was this thing that allowed you to link tables together, right? You had an account table and you had a customer table, and semantically they meant the same thing, right? A customer and an account were logically the same thing, and I could link them together, and that could link to the customer account or the prospect account, and I could have a single SQL query and I could hit all 15 tables at the same time, and they were logically virtually connected so that I did and semantically would resolve differences in the meaning of how those tables were defined. That's how I viewed it like 3 to 4 years ago. But what you just described is a lot more than that. What you just described honestly kind of sounds almost like, I don't want to oversimplify, but almost like an operating system, right?
Correct.
How do you respond to that?
Yeah, so a lot of people say use the term operating system, especially with LLMs. It's become a very common thing. Oh, LLM is an operating system. So it goes back to this whole influencer versus thought leader versus an expert. It all comes down to semantics. Although we're talking about semantics, so I'm using semantics in a different term here. But my point is that, yes, I mean, you can call it as an operating system, although operating system also does a lot of execution. And what I explained actually is execution, but this is not how conventionally people understand a semantic layer to be. They think semantic layer is a pie in the sky that will magically do this translation. But what I'm saying is, no, it should do the translation and then it should figure out where to execute. And if you combine these two, then yes, it is an operating system.
Yeah, well, that starts to get into a little maybe data fabric-y things.
Yeah.
And we need to peel that onion as well. But like, people may ask themselves, well, Malcolm, you're an MDM guy. Why are you talking about semantic layers? Well, an MDM is a semantic layer. It absolutely positively is a semantic layer. And the only thing that separated semantic layers from MDM was that MDM was applying business rules at an object and a field level, and semantic layers were applying them at a schema level. And MDM was doing some additional things like stewardship and maybe some workflow management and some other bells and whistles. So if you're asking, well, why is an MDM guy talking about a semantic layer? To me, these worlds are coming together. Yes. They're absolutely coming together. And there's a lot of kind of influences that are starting to coalesce. Another area that I'm really interested in is an area like our friend Juan Cicada is working on, which is using graph to apply meaning. I would argue meaning, which is the very core of what semantic means. It's the meaning, is definitions. How do I define something? Where he's using graph to allow to inject meaning from rows and columns into LLMs. This is another aspect of all of this. So there's so many things that are starting to kind of come together here. And you mentioned execute, which means some form of decision making.
Yes, correct.
Right? Okay. Go deeper on that. How is that actually happening? Is this like rules based, or is the LLM and AI going to be figuring this stuff out? How do decisions get made?
Right. So that takes us to where does semantic layer sit? And yes. So let's talk about that. I also want to mention, you said, you know, semantics giving the meaning. I think the word that we're using right now for in terms of LLM is the context.
Yes.
What is the context?
Better. Yeah.
Of you know, my question. So my this is a common thing where LLMs are so good at. Like, for example, if I say, you know, I have a question about bank, you know, by understanding the context, it says, oh, yeah, you're talking about which is the nearest Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, or Citibank. But no, in some cases, I actually may be asking directions to the river bank that I want to walk to. So that's why this context is so important in this scenario. Now, to answer your question about how does semantic layer execute and become more actionable? So that question has perplexed a lot of people, because the question is, where does the semantic layer sit?
Yes.
And that equation keeps shifting all the time. So we have to peel back and go back to the history to just get some idea as to who came up with this idea. There's a fascinating story about business objects. Two people, salespeople, I believe, who worked for Oracle in Spain, in France, were running around trying to educate people on Oracle's ability to do analytics. And they came upon this idea of, what if we created a translation layer in the UI called business objects, business objects universe. And that's how this whole concept of semantic layer started, I think, in early 1990s. So semantic layer was something in the UI. Now, which is great, like, as long as we had monolithic architectures, we had an Oracle database with a business object, sure, no problem. But we'll talk more about data fabric, because I think it's such an important topic these days. But what has happened is that our data estate has exploded. So we've got knowledge graphs, graph databases, we've got relational, we've got unstructured, semi-structured document databases. So we now have a proliferation of where the data is stored. And we have moved away from futile attempts to consolidate everything. So remember, we used to talk about corporate data factory, enterprise data warehouse, and we tried forever, but it's impractical to expect all the data will exist in one place with one BI tool. Now, even consumption has moved because one team may say, we are Microsoft experts, we love Power BI. Another team may say, no, but we like our Tableaus. But then a data scientist uses neither of these. So now the problem is that having that semantic layer in the BI tool became problematic. So it's been sort of moving down, like, should it be in the middleware? Should it be in the database? And this is the discussion. Like, for example, Databricks is a very engineering-focused company. They produce amazing products. But the concept of semantic layer was a very foreign concept to them until last year. Last year, at one of the podcasts I did with John Furrier for theCUBE, we actually went to bat and said that Databricks needs to realize that they're missing a semantic layer. This year, semantic layer is front and center of Unity Catalog. And here comes an interesting kicker. Not only have they created a semantic layer, they've created an ability to import semantics from a third-party independent product like AtScale, DBT, cube.dev. So basically, right now, with what's happening with Fabric and Lakehouses, the center of gravity is moving to the catalog as the arbiter of queries, as a place to mediate queries. And so right now the thinking is, let's put the semantic layer into the catalog. So I hope this answers, but that's the state of affairs today.
So much more we could press on here. So I do agree that the catalog today seems to be the place where some of this logic is coalescing, right?
Yes.
I would argue there are still a number of missing pieces around what we used to call at Gartner a recommendation engine, or which was a part of the data fabric at Gartner, this layer called the recommendation engine. We'll talk about that a little bit more, because I think that starts to get into AI, where the AIs can start to tell you how to model data. It can tell you the most efficient integration patterns. It can start to tell you what the data quality rules could or should be to optimize anything, whether that's an analytical process or an operational process. And what I just described, is what Gartner had envisioned the original data fabric to be, which I would argue starts to become a lot like an analytical operational system that would one day also include operational uses of data. And we start to get into operational versus analytical and some of the limitations about how we store data and disk and how disks operate and all sorts of philosophical things about data storage. But As a CDO, I mean, as a data catalog, the place where I should be, and you and I both know, people process technology. It's not just always technology. Yeah. There are people and there are processes, and you and I could both talk about those importance of those things for hours. But from a technology perspective, is a data catalog the place that I should be looking if I don't have one? Is that something you're going to see as a mission critical piece of an infrastructure going forward?
Yeah, so let's talk about this. In fact, you had even asked me a question earlier, which I'll answer now, about like, is it rule-based or how is it changing? Yeah. And so I'll give you an example of how the semantic layer creation is starting to change. Snowflake Summit also took place this month in June. Actually, by the time we watch this, might be a few weeks late. But in June of 2024, two pivotal conferences took place, Databricks Data and AI Summit and Snowflake Data Cloud Summit. In Snowflake Data Cloud Summit, we saw a launch of a product which Snowflake had announced, but may have gone GA, Document AI. And Document AI is an ability where the business people can point to a PDF and it parses a PDF and creates a semantic layer, and then you can ask natural language questions on it. So this is a beauty of AI. In AI, you don't necessarily need to give the rules. You can give the rules in a structured database because it's already structured. Somebody's done the work. But what happens when a new piece of information comes up? Somebody has to go and create rules for that because, you know, but LLMs to some extent, if they've trained on a vast corpus of data, then they have that ability to probabilistically determine what the semantic layer is. Now I can start asking questions. But then another, so that's to answer the previous question about should it be rule-based or inferred? And I think it's a combination. I would not say trust LLM with your eyes closed because we know LLMs hallucinate. Hallucination is not a bug, it's a feature of LLM. So we have to have a hybrid. But now the question comes: okay, dude, great job. You've inferred the semantics. Where do I keep it? How do I reuse it? So you need a place to store it, and that place to me becomes a data catalog. And there's a bigger reason, by the way, because data catalogs are no longer just as Juan once said, museum of metadata.
I love that.
It's more than that. Like, for example, I can apply my policies of who is allowed to see it. See, I can do it at the data level, cell level, at table, columns, fields. That's great. But then if I've got data in Snowflake, BigQuery, Databricks, Cloudera, you name it, Redshift, Oracle, SAP, it becomes a lot harder. So, but if I can have a business representation of it at some place, let's say it's a catalog, and that's my semantic layer, then maybe I can apply it at the semantic layer. So I can have a UI rule base that says, if you belong to this group, you are allowed to read this data, but not that data. So the row level, column level security can be applied at one place. So that's why I like the concept of catalog as being the center of gravity.
Well, it's interesting because that suggests a form of centralized data management. And I think for a lot of people, that creates an antibody response. Hmm. Like I think thanks to the data mesh and a few other forces, that the idea of having one place and one thing and one tool creates anxiety for a lot of data leaders. I don't have that anxiety because, as you mentioned, there were a lot of interesting things that were announced at Snowflake Summit and Databricks Data and AI Summit. Same is true with Microsoft Build.
Yes.
Where at Build, they were talking about the exact same things. And a big focus for Microsoft is having a catalog infrastructure. Theirs is Purview. But running within this data fabric where it's agnostic to a certain degree of data warehouse or data lake or lakehouse infrastructures where the fabric is interacting with, right? Like you could have data in the Microsoft announced a partnership with Snowflake. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Like,
yes,
they announced, and it's just an announcement. So obviously there's a lot of work to actually make that happen. Microsoft was already partnered with Databricks, but the idea that you could have data sitting in Snowflake and still be able to bring it into a Microsoft fabric. It's Delta Parquet format within the fabric and do all of the things that you just described from a catalog perspective, data quality mm-hmm. perspective, running Spark jobs, running SQL queries, doing anything and doing that from within a Microsoft environment, but where the data is actually technically in a Snowflake environment. That to me is just like, these worlds coming together. I never thought I would see that, but I think that gives a lot of security to CDOs who may be concerned about vendor lock-in, who may be concerned about, I've got basically a multi-cloud environment and how do I create more of a single cloud experience because I don't want to have 15 data catalogs.
Yeah. So Malcolm, I was astonished to learn something so basic that it actually blew me away. You know what SaaS stands for?
Software as a service.
But that's not what business wants. You know what business wants?
Everything yesterday?
it's still SaaS, but it's service as software.
Interesting. Okay.
So what? Why fabrics are in such a vogue? And this is Microsoft Fabric, Google has Dataplex, Amazon is getting into it, or Snowflake Databricks are definitely into this converged integrated environment, is because businesses have sent out this message that, guys, we want outcomes. So and some people are calling it outcome as a service. Some are saying, no, it's a value as a service, task as a service, result as a service. But the idea is that it's not software as a service because you're still getting software, which is the medium, a means to the end. You want service as the deliverable, delivered as a software. So it's interesting how, like, you know, a small minor thing like that, like just a change in the acronym, you turn it on its head and you go, yeah, that makes sense. This is why fabrics are in demand, because businesses don't want to spend time kludging together lots of moving parts. And I think this, what we are noticing now, is definitely technology has caught up with agents, AI agents are becoming big, but although that still hasn't, it's not baked yet. But oh, no. I think what's happened is that in modern data stack, we pivoted to the extremes where we had super specialized, micro-specialized software products for every itsy bitsy piece of a pipeline. And it became too much for the businesses that they're like, okay, we've experimented with this. So first of all, there's no common metadata standard. So if I have a HubSpot, which has my customer information, and I have a Salesforce, and I have Marketo and Jira and all of these things. They all are having their own copy of metadata.
Well, so I love the idea of services as software. Mm-hmm. And let's take the most basic use case that you've already suggested, which is I'm a business user, whatever. I'm a salesperson. I'm in Salesforce, or I'm wherever. I'm in Dynamics. Doesn't matter. And I've got a Copilot, and I'm asking, what region was the most productive for me last year, and why?
Correct.
Right. And I'm asking these questions in a Copilot, and I'm getting predictable, accurate, trustworthy results from that chatbot. Now, I think we're still a reasonably long way away from that future because of something something you touched on, which is, and I've been saying this a lot in my content recently, which is that today we do a reasonably good job of rows and columns, right? Well, forget rows and columns, just structured data, right? Sure. We do a reasonably good job at structured data. But these systems are built on and optimized with unstructured data. So what you talked about earlier is this, you gave an example of a PDF, right? And applying structure to a PDF, but that jump, that bridge, and this, again, we're right back to a semantic layer, I think, particularly as an operating system, this bridge between structured data, which is what we do mostly from a governance perspective, to something that is unstructured and has the meaning and the context. And thank you for drawing this distinction between context and meaning. You can infer meaning through context, but these are separate concepts. Thank you for that. You can infer the context. You can provide additional information. You can build this bridge between structured data and unstructured data. Today, I would argue it's really not there. It's not much. It's early stages, but I see a world where using software like OpenAI Studio or any of the other tools that you can use to build chatbots, where you just point it at a structured data source, right? Like whatever, wherever your CRM data, or maybe it's transaction data, doesn't matter. And it can consume that structured data as a means to bind the answer, to ground, I think is the technically correct answer, is to ground or to build a RAG pattern on the fly. Mm-hmm. And me, the salesperson in Salesforce asking the question, I don't even know that's all happening. It's just happening magically in the background. Yeah. Where a RAG pattern is built on the fly and I'm hitting the right data. And I think that's what the world we need to get to. Do you agree?
Yeah, completely. In fact, Snowflake announced Cortex Analyst and Cortex Search. And Cortex Search is basically where you're doing hybrid search. You're doing a vector search and a deterministic text-based search without writing a single line of retrieval augmented generation or RAG code. So we are getting there. So we have a bigger problem. So right now, the salesperson cannot go ask a question and guaranteed get the right answer. So what Juan Cicada has done and his team at data.world is amazing because they've shown these benchmarks where you use a knowledge graph. And then actually cube.dev took it a level further by putting a semantic layer. And they got 100% accuracy. So Juan moved it quite hi, and then David Tillike at cube.dev took it to the next level. So combination of knowledge graph and a semantic layer. They're very closely related. Like every semantic layer is a knowledge graph, but not every knowledge graph is necessarily a semantic layer. And so there's a slight difference. But anyway, without getting into the nitty-gritty details, but my point is that RAG is one way, knowledge graphs is one way. There's something else that's going to become prevalent, which is you're continuously fine-tuning the model with new data as a new data comes in. So all of these things are just beginning to happen. But I want to go to the example that you talked quite a bit about chatbot. See, chatbot, I ask a question and I'll get some response. That if that response is not up to the snuff, I'll ignore it. But we are moving into a very dangerous place where we are trying to build these autonomous multi-step process execution engines based on agents. Here, there is no human intervention. If there is some mistake, hallucination, it is going to go downstream to everything. So we cannot possibly live in an environment where the agent is understanding my context and based on that is making a decision. It's calling, doing a function call to another LLM, executing an API. So this whole DAG, if you may call it, based on an LLM is where we are moving to. And to get there, we have to solve the accuracy problem because we don't have a human in the loop in future situations.
I do believe that's a solvable problem, right? And the way that I look at this is that we are on a road from manual management to automated management of data and governance as well. And we are early in the stages of what's just called augmentation. We're early in those stages. But the problem you just described, I think, is a very, very solvable one. If my AI is smart enough and it says, hey, you know, and chatbot, and I ask a question and it gives a response, in theory, and if I ask a very pointed question about what should I do, like should I do A or should I do B, in theory, in the future, you could have AI that goes out and runs Monte Carlo simulations against taking that very action.
Yes.
Running scenarios, running what-ifs, running models on the fly that says, if you do this, here is the expected business outcome of taking this action. This starts to incorporate the idea of what Gartner would call decision science.
Yes.
Where you could actually build full circle from insight, analytics, recommendations. That's where we're going. We're going from insight and analytics. We're getting to the world of recommendations. We've talked about this. But to close the loop on that is decision science, where you could actually model what the impacts would be of a recommended specific piece of guidance. So I think what you mentioned is a solvable problem.
Yes. In fact, today we rely on prompt. Even RAG is actually a prompt engineering thing, where RAG is actually doing some retrieval of contextual data to generate a prompt. So the problem we are trying to solve is determining how correct the output is. So evaluating the output. And that evaluation, we are very rapidly moving into using LLMs themselves to evaluate LLMs.
Yes, yes.
It's all using LLM as a judge, you know, and that's where we are heading to. And actually, I have to say that a lot of people who are on the sidelines or skeptics of this, I tell them all the time that in 1994, we were asking, what has the World Wide Web done for us? What's the point of the internet? These are all static pages.
I'm going to buy a fridge online. Yeah.
Yeah. But today we do everything on it. So I'm like this is 2024. Don't be 1994. It's early stages. To your point, these things will get better. These are solvable problems. But just like the internet, you know, it took some time, maybe 10 years before iPhones and social mobile and all these things converged, and then it became the de facto way to order your groceries. I remember 1994, Webvan was the hottest startup, and it was not 94, like 98, 99, and it was the most spectacular disasters of dot-com bust. So we are going to see that happen. But that doesn't mean it's end of the road. What it means is that the technology will keep on improving. Behind the scenes, it won't be a hype. And then 2026, 2027, it'll become the de facto way of how we do business.
I think one of the, and I'd love your opinion on this, I think one of the biggest, that's not the biggest, but it's certainly a gating factor here, is the way we think about data and analytics. And something you touched on earlier is a required, what I would argue is a required mind shift. You mentioned that a move from a very deterministic world to a probabilistic world, where everything in the future becomes probabilistic. Yeah. I'm really excited about this because we've always known that the answer to questions is, it depends, podcast, right?
Yes.
Right? Like who's asking? Right?
Yes.
What's the context? What's the desired outcome? This is relevant when, in my world, when we talk about versions of truth. And for a long time, we clung to the idea of a single version of the truth, when in reality, what's true to marketing is it could be different than what's true to finance, and they could be right.
Correct.
So the world of this probabilistic world that we're moving to, a world where context is king, that's the semantic layer. Context is king, I think will enable and require a mindset shift and thinking differently about how we approach data and analytics. What would you say to that?
Yeah, so one thing that I have learned over decades of, following the trends and working, that we need, I feel that I need to stop thinking about, is it A or B? It's always going to be a hybrid. So it'd be a combination, a hybrid of deterministic and probabilistic. Why I'm saying this is because we have a few minutes left, so let's talk about data mesh, data fabric. This whole thing about is it centralized, is decentralized? Centralized is way too constricting for modern times, so we should decentralize. Oh, now we can decentralize. So I think we need to get away from this and just acknowledge it'll be a hybrid world. And by hybrid, what I mean in my mind, what I see as a success is that you centralize at the lowest layer, at the infrastructure layer. That infrastructure means you pick a choice, technology of choice. Let's say Snowflake. Don't dicker around with one team has this and another one has this and on, because who's going to maintain it? So centralize even governance. So that semantic layer, because to your point, there are different sources of truth, there are different understandings, there are different contexts. So you have to have a common business glossary, let's say. But then as you move up to the domains, you decentralize applications. So the person in pharma who's responsible for clinical tests knows that domain inside out, knows that data inside out, not the data engineer. So they need to own, and maybe they'll have their own federated governance because they have a different understanding of terms than the sales or the R&D or the supply chain team. So you have a centralized infrastructure, decentralized application, and then you have a distributed products or data products on top. And by distributed, so this is how I see it. So it's a hybrid. Depending upon which layer you are at, you have a different point of view or approach.
I love it. Functional, cross-functional, enterprise-wide.
Correct.
And each of them is their own context, and each of them can be right at the same time, and that's fine. And you don't have, but if the CEO asks, how many customers do we have? There's only one answer to that question. So there's a context at each of those levels. And the things that is going to allow all of those contexts to coexist is some form of a semantic layer. Today, for a lot of companies, that's MDM. It's also what is traditionally known as a semantic layer from more of a query perspective and an analytics perspective. But all these worlds are absolutely coming together, and it comes right back down to context. When we were at Gartner, there was this term was thrown around a lot of adaptive data governance, adaptive data management. To me, that's just a way of saying context matters.
Yes.
And acknowledging that context matters.
Yeah.
All right, Sanjeev, I need to let you get back to work because we could keep talking for hours and hours and hours. I love talking about this stuff with you. This is where the world is going. It's not centralized or decentralized. It's both. And we need to be aware of context. Awesome stuff. Thank you so much for coming out today and sharing your wisdom.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
All right. To our listeners, to our subscribers, if you've made it this far, thank you very much. Please take the time to like, maybe even subscribe to the content. We do this every 2 weeks with brilliant people like Sanjeev and others. For now, I'm Malcolm Hawker, head of data strategy at Prophecy Software and host of CDO Matters, and I hope I will see you on another episode sometime very, very soon. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Sanjeev.
Thank you. Bye.